everyone, welcome to another episode of Slice of Healthcare. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. On today's episode, we have Dr. Buck Parker. He's a surgeon who is absolutely crushing social media, has right around 140,000 followers on Instagram, over 70,000 subscribers on YouTube, and his content is absolutely great. That's how we ended up first getting in touch, was via Instagram. After I watched some of his videos, he has some pretty graphic videos and pictures that he'll post from time to time, which very interesting to see. And I was very excited to have him on the podcast finally and have some great conversations about him, social media, how he's gotten to where he is today, and a few other topics. So definitely check out the podcast. Let us know what you think. Without further ado, let's bring him on. Hi, thank you so much for joining us on the Slice of Healthcare podcast.
Yeah.
How's your day going?
Oh, busy.
Nothing wrong with that, though. Better busy than not, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Are you off today?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're just stepping out for a podcast, then. I like it.
Yep, that's right. trying to do, you know, like five things at once.
Hey. Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it, and I know our audience will as well. I think it'd be great if you could start by quickly giving a little bit about your background, you know, how you started and where you're at today, and then we can go into a couple questions.
Sure. Well, I maybe am a unconventional student, I suppose. I didn't really know if I wanted to go into medicine. I kind of did when I was in high school, but I didn't really kind of believe that I was smart enough to do it until about halfway through college, and I started to figure out how to study, and I had actually somebody help me, and I realized I wasn't an idiot, and I started doing really well on the science courses, specifically physics. I did like doing really well in that, and so I decided, yeah, I can, you know, go to med school. And so, but I had totally destroyed my record up until then. And so, I ended up going to a Caribbean school as some advice from a family friend who was a physician. And I went to St. Matthew's, which was in Belize. So I was there for 2 years, and then 2 years in the States. I went around the States as Baltimore, Kansas City, and Chicago for my third and fourth year rotations. And then I got a residency at Henry Ford in Detroit for general surgery. I always knew I wanted to do surgery. I just didn't know like what kind, really. And it was really heavy there on trauma, as you can imagine. And so we took a lot of trauma call and took a look care of a lot of trauma patients, even though it wasn't, you know, it was a specific amount of trauma you need to take or do in general surgery, and we did way over that. So we got kind of comfortable with that. So then I actually went to Wyoming, to my hometown, to practice for a couple of years, and it was like really boring and terrible, and there wasn't a lot of patients anyway. And so then I realized I needed to get like a real job, and I took a job with acute care surgery, doing emergency general surgery and trauma in Florida. And then that same company had an opening in Salt Lake City, and so they took that because I like to ski and I like the outdoors, and Florida doesn't have a lot of skiing, I found out. So I moved here, and now I'm doing acute care surgery and trauma. So just general surgery and trauma surgery, no real elective surgery. And I work at two different hospitals. One's a level 2 center, one's a level 3. And I'm the trauma director at the level 3 center. And just actually became one of the trauma surveyors for the state of Utah as well. So that's in a nutshell, that's where I'm at.
Thank you for that. I really appreciate it. I'm gonna ask the question. I know the audience is thinking, how do you manage to juggle all of what you do clinically, and then you're also very entrepreneurial with your site and your videos and your social media channels? How do you do it all?
I have no friends and I have no family.
The truth.
I do have some friends. You know, I don't have kids, so that probably helps a lot. But I think that If you're going to be good at anything, like exceptional, not good, you can be good at a lot of stuff. But I think if you're going to be exceptional at anything, it just takes that like 24/7 attention. That, and the only way you're going to do something 24/7, like this morning, I got up at 6 and I was like immediately working, and all of a sudden I was like, oh, I got this to do, I got to do that. I'm gonna finish. Pretty soon it's like 11 and I have like, you know, still working on the same stuff. It's just because you love to do it. And I think that's like the key. Some people say don't love what you do, or don't do what you love because then it becomes work. But I think that, you know, if you the only reason I do social media and stuff like that in the videos is because I love to do it, and I, you know, put 100% of my effort and time into surgery for a really long time because I love that too. I didn't love studying 12 hours a day and stuff, but I loved it. I loved what I was going to get to do eventually. And so that drove me to like keep to hang in there, especially through medical school and, you know, this MLEs and residency tests and, you know, papers and all that stuff too. So I think that's probably the key.
Yeah. Now, a lot of healthcare professionals would love to be in your position, being super active on social media and creating this very engaging content. What would be your advice to them to just get started with it?
So it's actually kind of interesting. I started to try to do a YouTube channel like a few years ago, and it just kind of like didn't go anywhere, got no traction. And I was doing what I thought people wanted to see. Actually, I was doing more of like what my job was and the diagnosis and surgeries that I do. And I was talking about appendicitis and colonoscopies and, you know, preventative care. And nobody cares about that stuff, right? until you have appendicitis, now you care, you know? And so I don't know. I kind of stumbled upon what people wanted from me specifically. And it wasn't really for me to talk about appendicitis or gallbladder problems. It was more like students, they wanted to understand what it took to do to go into medicine, what do I do now, and all that stuff. And so it did take a little bit for me to understand what people wanted from me. And so I think that's one component. And I'm not sure how you go about doing that, honestly. I really just, you know, stumbled upon it. And then the second thing is that I find it's really engaging, that I get a lot of responses when I'm very authentic about like what's going on, the good and the bad. It's always, you know, like social media is heavily weighted on the good, you know, and I feel like a lot of people respond to many of my posts that are the other way, like, hey, I had a really rough time and I wasn't that good. And, you know, I think we're a little scared, especially in medicine, because no one wants to go be like, oh, hey, I'm a bad doctor. I mean, that's not really what you're saying, but at some point you had a tough time with something or whatever it is. And there's this like culture in medicine right now. It's still here. And especially in corporate kind of healthcare, is they don't want to expose the human nature of medicine, right? I was actually doing some CME this morning, and they're like, I had to do it on medical errors, right? And you know, there's a big paper about there's 100,000 medical errors a year, or 100,000 deaths due to medical errors a year in the healthcare system. Well, that was written in like 99, and now the updated number is like 250,000, being the third highest number of deaths next to cancer and heart disease, right? So and we all like don't want to talk about that. It's kind of weird, but I think people really appreciate when you're honest and stuff. Now the flip side is that you don't want to get fired And so it's a little bit, you know, you got to be careful of exactly what you're saying in that sense. And obviously you got to be careful of HIPAA and things like that. But for, but you know, the honesty really helps a lot. The authenticity helps a lot. People really appreciate that. But that being said, I will say that there is a window of time when you start doing this stuff and people go like, what the fuck are you doing kind of thing. and then until you get some traction and then you can, you know, kind of visually explain to, or, you know, these people that say it said, like, what are you doing, why are you doing this, you're a crazy person. And then they start to realize when there's a lot of people commenting like how amazing it is and this and that, and hey, thank you for your help. And then those people start to shut up and you get more comments on the positive side. And so, but there is a window where it was really interesting, and mostly it was like my closer friends and family saying like, what, you know, when I initially started the YouTube, I actually shut it down because my close friends were like, this doesn't make any sense. And why do I even care about this? And why, you know, you should be doing this in your videos instead. And you should be doing that. And what, you know, I was like, geez, man, I really suck at this thing. And everyone's telling me not to do it. I think I better stop. Like, I'm getting a lot of resistance. And then I started changing the content, and that was resonating with people that were not my friends. So it is important to know exactly who you're creating content for, right? Because you're not creating content for the entire world. It's really a defined demographic that you're creating content for. If you don't know who that is, then it's going to be tough, and you'll get a lot more kind of feedback negative feedback. If you know exactly who it's going to, those people will be happy to receive that.
It's funny, when I look at your most popular YouTube videos that you uploaded, you know, we talk about how people are interested not just like what's going on within your clinical day to day, but like, you know, about med school and money and success and any like MCATs. But you have a lot of your top videos, like hernia symptoms, choosing specialty. So you still have a very diverse content, would you say? I mean, yeah, you have from clinical to med school to miscellaneous.
Yeah, you know, those hernia videos. So this is a kind of a side. The hernia videos I did initially when I was trying to do more clinical stuff and like explain to people about the things that I do. And so I started doing that, and they didn't seem to get a lot of traction in comments. But I think then I started getting into about med school stuff, and YouTube liked that more than it liked my hernia videos. But because this is more just about YouTube in general, because YouTube liked my channel more, then it started showing my videos more. And hernia is a big topic on YouTube in general. They just didn't like it for me at the time. And then like, you know, then like when YouTube started to like my channel more, it started to show all of my videos more. And then since hernia is a big topic, then they started showing that a lot more. And it's like a bigger market. Does that make sense? So you have medical students, or you have kids that are like interested in medical school. It's a smaller market than people in general that are interested in having their hernia fixed. Like when you're having your hernia fixed, one of the most common surgeries, then a lot of people are searching that all the time. And so I think that's what happened with that. Cause there's like a few videos that I have that do have a large amount of views. And there are some of those initial ones that I was talking about, appendicitis, hernia, this and that. And I kind of dropped that because I didn't think anyone wanted to hear about it. But I think, looking back, that's what happened.
Interesting. So it's kind of like, so
similar to Google, right? So there's something with their algorithm, right, that was making you now become more popular. Okay. Do you have a favorite social media platform? I mean, you're pretty much on every single one, but does one stand out to you more than the other? Do you like using one more than the other?
I like Instagram. I tried to kind of get some traction on Facebook, and I could not. I'm not sure what happened. I was posting the exact same posts on Facebook and Instagram. Instagram kind of took off, and Facebook didn't. So I focused more on creating that for Instagram, and I do like YouTube. It's much more labor intensive. So that's another reason I like Instagram, because you're like, oh, I have a, you know, you can take pictures and then think about stuff later, and you don't, you know, you can just write a post, and with YouTube, it's like more of a, you know, production kind of thing if you do a good, to a good job.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, Instagram, the simplicity is what really stands out, right? Like, you just nail it on the head. It's just so easy, and a lot of the other platforms take a little more effort, which can be good and bad, I guess. But
yeah, and Instagram is like hot right now, and which is why I think, you know, I got more traction. Just, I think it's probably more popular than maybe not YouTube, but definitely Facebook, especially. Well, you know, you also think about the demographic. Like, if I was selling walkers, but my demographic is, you know, most of people who like to see my stuff are either, you know, going to be in medical school or trying to get in medical school or in medical school or in residency. So that's that younger age group, which they like Instagram more.
Well, this is actually a really good transition, because I wanted to ask you if you could briefly go into Step Prep Academy.
Yeah, sure. I did my initial study course, and like, I kind of, you know, after a while, people were asking me like, how did you, you know, the biggest question I got was like, how do you study for 8 to 10 hours a day? And I was like, well, okay, well, maybe I should, you know, explain this more. And so I did this course on how to study, it's called Secret Study Hacks, because that's what like marketers tell you to put secret, you know, that name in there. And everybody's more interested. I was like, okay, this is really cheesy, but okay, we'll do that. And it was really cool. And we got a lot of people. We got about a couple thousand subscribers in there, and lots of good results and all that stuff. And so from that, I had a couple other students like just come to me and say, hey, I teach, you know, we have the MCAT one, Austin's like, hey, I teach MCAT one-on-one. I saw you did this thing. Like, I want to do that. It's like, okay. And then this other kid, he's a Johns Hopkins resident he's an ER Johns Hopkins first year resident. And he came and said, hey, I teach step. I've been teaching step one for, you know, 2 years since I took it one-on-one. And I think I really have a cool way to do it. And I don't know if anybody else is doing it like this. And so he kind of explained everything. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So we actually, he sort of like me, I can't tell who's the bigger nerd, me or him, probably, probably him, but he built an algorithm like with an Excel spreadsheet, with all these mathematical calculations of like, what's on the test, you know, percentage wise, what's on the test. And then what are the materials that are available to everybody? Because everybody kind of studies the same materials. Like, we have first aid. We have, like, I don't even know what you guys study anymore. Like, the Crush was one of the big books for us. And then of course, the questions. And then so he broke it down into, you know, am I going to get – how many questions on endocrine pharmacology am I going to get, right? And it turns out it's like 0.25 questions maybe on your test. But there's a lot of like kind of complex things you have to remember about that stuff, and takes a lot of time to memorize everything, and you know, how many times you have to review it. So he kind of built an algorithm saying like, you probably don't need to spend, you know, any time on this. It's maybe going to be one question. So then we took that and built a software program and put it into an app, like a web app, we're gonna try and put it into phone app pretty soon too. And then so you just plug in how many days do I have to study for the test, and then it spits out like how many pages of each main material, like first day, do you have to study every day in order to get your goal? And he's got some other things in there too. It's like a lot of tutorials, video tutorials from him is kind of not test theory, but like his test approach, and how to learn the test. Cause that's a real big important thing. I think one of the things that I learned going through all of these tests is that you can study your ass off. I studied really hard for the MCAT. I did terrible. It's because I didn't know the test, but I didn't know that until later. I studied for the USMLE. I studied the materials, but I also studied that test, and that helped me. And then when I got in step 1, 2, and 3, I did really well. And then I did really well in our ab site, and I studied the test as well as the material. Then I got to our board, like American College Surgeons board exam for general surgery. I studied the written test, but not the oral test. I passed the written test at a 90th percentile, and I failed the oral test because I did not study the oral test. I studied the materials on the oral test. I think that's one thing that I really like that we can say, dude, you know, you're not dumb because you got a bad grade on a test. You're not studying the test. It's not like it was terrible. I felt like a bad doctor, and it took me legit like 2 years to get the balls up to study for that oral exam again, because I thought I was a bad doctor and a bad surgeon and unsafe, because they always talk about, well, it's testing how safe you are. It's fucking bullshit. It's testing your knowledge of the exam, and so when I went back and I studied, I talked to a lot of my friends who had taken it and passed and all this stuff. They gave me all these materials, like, oh yeah, this is what we studied for, not the like material, like don't read the book, read the stuff about the test. And I was like, oh okay, so I did that, and I went back and I took the test and I passed the test. So that's really what I like about the MCAT course we have, and also this one, is it's focuses more on the test. You obviously have to know the material to some extent, but that only gets you so many points on these exams, and it may or may not be enough for you to get the residency you want. Because step one is basically like, okay, you get a 99 in step one, you go wherever you want. You barely pass. Good luck, right? Good luck getting the residency of your choice. You're going to be probably having to do either medicine, family medicine, or pediatrics, or whatever's the easiest thing to get into. And that's, it's a sad, I guess, reality.
That was one of the, upon talking with more healthcare professionals, that was something myself and a lot of people that weren't directly, a physician or a nurse that didn't understand. I always thought you could choose whatever, originally, when I was younger, that you could choose whatever you wanted for a specialty. And then I learned the reality that is not the case. which is probably a good thing, though.
Not only is it the residency of your choice, it's the location of your choice. I think something that many people don't understand is that, a lot of doctors are not living where they want to live, and it can be a big deal. It is life changing. A lot of stuff in medicine is life changing, which is, and a lot of it's good, but some of it's tough. I mean, I went into general surgery, and I went back to my hometown, and it was like, no, just kidding. There's not really enough work for you here, And so then I took a job in Orlando. I was like, I don't want to go. I never wanted to live in Florida. I mean, that's, if you like Mickey Mouse, that's an awesome place to live. But I was like, okay, now what? So it's not always straightforward. And you know, the better you do on these, all these exams, like the sooner you accept, like your mission in life is to crush every single one of these stupid exams, until like you end up with what you want, the better you're going to be off, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a harsh reality for many that get into the field to figure that out.
Exactly. Crazy.
Well, I don't want to take too much more of your time. I want to thank you though for coming on the Slice of Healthcare podcast. And what I want to do is I'll throw the Prep Academy link that we were talking about. I'll throw that in the show notes, and then also your social links real quick. Where can people? I mean, they'll be in the notes.
Yeah.
For your social links, but where can people hear from you or learn more about
probably
you?
The best place to go is Instagram. It's just at Dr. Buck Parker. So DrBuckParker. You know, my YouTube is, you just search Buck Parker on YouTube and you'll find it. And then the stepprepacademy.com. And that's going to be launching this week, actually, or Sunday. We're going to open that up. So check that out.
Love it. And something makes me strongly believe that next time we talk, you'll have another couple of things in the works.
I got a couple of things. Yeah, I got a couple of cool things coming too. Yeah, I've been talking to some other people, and it's been really, really fun. I think, you know, medicine and surgery is certainly really cool, but social media is, especially in medicine, I think it's so interesting. We almost have, we're looking, like, you can look into the future, right? Because everybody else except medicine has fully embraced it and is like 100% full steam ahead with social media, and medicine is like, I'm not sure if it's any good. You're like, well, the rest of the world does.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool time, because we can just, you know, you can make almost like big bets on it, because it's pretty much guaranteed to take over medicine at some point too.
Yeah, and you definitely got a big jump start on that. Well, no, you didn't get a jump start. You, like you said, you saw an opportunity early on when medicine didn't, and you've taken full advantage of that. So
yeah, get ahead of the tidal wave.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Cool. And blockchain is you know, I think definitely gonna be in there too. So don't ignore that. I know you're not.
Absolutely. Yep. Full on board with blockchain technology, artificial intelligence, and
yeah,
I mean, it's gonna be, I believe within the next 5 to 10 year period, we'll see some of the most innovation in medicine that we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
absolutely. Especially with the millennial generation pushing up through the ranks. I mean, they're not.
Yeah, no kidding.
They're not gonna stop for slow processes.
Yeah, they're gonna be like, hey, where's Dr. Smith? He's like, oh, he's at home on Twitter, working from Twitter. Don't worry.
it'll definitely be interesting to see like everything that's happening like that, for sure. It'll be good to keep tabs on it. But thank you, really, thank you so much for coming on. Our audience is appreciative, and so am I. And let's definitely stay in touch. And this should be coming out. Sure. In February, we'll be releasing it, and I'll be sure to let you know, and we'll put it on all the social channels, and look forward to everyone's reactions.
All right. Thank you guys.
Okay. Have a good one. Bye.
Take care.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in for another episode of Slice of Healthcare. Please be sure to follow us on our social channels, on pretty much every social channel. It's at Slice of Healthcare. On Twitter, it's at Slice of HC. We don't use that much, but we will answer if anyone tweets at us or sends us a message there. Also, for those of you that are listening on iTunes, please be sure to head over to iTunes, leave us a rating/review. We'd really appreciate the support and feedback. And if you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out at sliceofhealthcare@gmail.com, or send us a message on Instagram or any of our other channels, and we'll get right back to you. Thanks, and everyone have a great day.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.